Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got TJ Erickson, YouTuber from Park Rapids, Minnesota, back on the show. We've had TJ on a whole bunch of times. He's a great source of information. He's a great guy, and he's a great angler. This episode is no different, so let's get right into it here. We're talking early ice, midwinter ice, just all kinds of different ice fishing topics with TJ Erickson on the JMO Podcast. TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. Head to their website, tkicnc.com, to find a full listing of their offerings. There you're going to find for this ice season the deluxe TKI sonar shuttle or the collapsible carbon fiber pole mounting kit. For top-of-the-line, American-made fishing equipment, head to tkicnc.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter and window solutions with a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products. That's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. All right, TJ, man, it's early ice. Here we are again. We're going to talk ice fishing. I want to get updates from you. I know you've been, you released some cool content stuff that you filmed with the boys, last winter, but you've also been filming some fresh content. I want to get a little bit of a rundown, sort of an update, on all of it, the content, just the fishing that you've been doing and what you've been up to, man. Give it to me.
Yeah. I mean, this is early ice is always like this because it's not necessarily a date on a calendar, you know, like, okay, fishing opener, you can know when it's happening and you can be prepared. This time of year, it's like, when are we going to have safe ice? And there can sometimes be like weeks of a variability in that from year to year. So I've always a little bit scattered early ice. Sometimes in like super late ice years, I can get pretty dialed, but I'm usually just getting off of some fall fishing because I try to keep the boat out as late as possible, even though I should like start getting stuff dialed in for ice fishing. And so I'm kind of behind the eight balls a lot of times, just especially with some of the small local stuff. When we get quick freezes, it can happen fast. And this year was no exception. As far as like content side of things go, I'll kind of recap. Yeah, last March, me and Nick and Brett filmed another season of the Walleye Cup. Super fun series. If you haven't watched that, it's just a ton of fun. Us three are competing for this like amazing little mug that's in. It's like literally a 32-inch walleye head molded into this mug. We didn't know what to do for a little prize. We wanted to do something kind of like tongue in cheek, but Brett found this thing. We're like, this thing is actually like super awesome, and it's one of one. This guy just like made it, sold it on eBay, and that's it. And so it's like super, whoever has it, we're always like just wrapping it in bubble wrap, you know, because it's just super cool thing. And so yeah, we did another season of that on Lake Winnipeg, and obviously Lake Winnipeg is just an incredible fishery. This one was kind of a crazy one because it was 48 hours out there, we from the start to finish, so it was two overnights and It was a ton of fun. We just keep trying to come up with fresh ideas for these little competitions because we love doing these competitions. We love watching the Outposts and Game of Inches and all these other little competitions that guys are doing. We kind of want to do our own. So that dropped in, I think it was October, November. I can't quite remember. Maybe November. And that was on Nick's channel. So if you want to check that out, that's over there. But just a super fun, like just a different dynamic to it with this overnight and up all of us camping and running and gunning during the day, camping at night. And we had a little wrinkle in the plan of like, who's ever in the lead can't use forward facing sonar. And just some of those types of things, immediate updates, a lot of those things. So it's super cool. Those dropped that year, in November. And then me and Nick, for as far as like current stuff, me and Nick had kind of been talking. Every year it's always a guess of like, okay, where's going to be first ice? Last year, you know, Nick found some safe ice over North Dakota there before even like Canadian waters were frozen. It was kind of crazy. And then, so we were just kind of had this plan like, hey, if it lines up, as soon as we have ice anywhere, like let's drive. Even if it's 10, 11 hours, like we're kind of crazy like that. And so we kept an eye on it, kept an eye on it, kept an eye on it. And it's a little bit tougher for me because I am still teaching. He has a little more flexibility. I don't. Long story short, we knew there for at least a week there had been some safe ice up at an area that I know is near and dear to your heart as well, up at Wekusko Falls Lodge, which is like 11 hours north for me. I think, you know, a little extra hour or two for Nick because he's a little further south. But we heard there was some safe ice and it lined up with our schedules. My amazing family was gracious enough to let me move Thanksgiving. And so we went up, I think it was like Monday through Thursday or something like that over the Thanksgiving break stretch. So it was a little easier for school as well. And we literally left at 9 p.m. And drove through the night up there. Nick, I don't think got any sleep. I got like maybe an hour or two of sleep in the car. And we showed up at the first lake that we heard had some safe ice and we fished for some brookies. Super cool. Got a lot of cool underwater footage. So that was the first video. We got to Wekusko that night. And we kind of connected. Actually, Clayton was up there at the same time. So that was super cool. We got to connect with Clayton, hang out with him a bit, just kind of, you know, share some information and that kind of stuff. And Clayton had been on some giant fish. If you saw any of his videos, if you haven't seen Clayton's videos for when he was chasing those giant rainbows, you need to go check those out. Such, I mean, it's like multiple fish of a lifetime. And so that was super cool. We got to do that for a couple days. Had some really cool action, had some really cool live scope stuff. The bite started getting a little slower. Me and Nick got there, but I mean, we're used to catching, if we're catching rainbow trout, it's like 12 inches and mm-hmm. That's a pretty solid one. Where, I mean, they're talking like mid-20s and above. And this is like just a different world. We were so not used to it. It took us honestly like 2 or 3 days to get kind of dialed in on how to even land these fish. They are, you know, it's like probably 4 inches of ice to 4 to 6, depending on where we were at. Those things are so hard to land. I dumped a couple of Nick's fish. And it was just like so painful. We finally landed one of my, and there's just a lot of stuff going on. We ended up doing some sight fishing. We caught some beautiful big brookies, some big rainbow. It was super cool. So those were our first couple of videos. And then one day, the day before we left, there was one of the walleye lakes that were frozen over. And so we went over there, try to get some walleye content. And I mean, just like you can imagine, I mean, it was just like, we fished for, I think, an hour. I just recorded straight, and I was having a tough time even, like, getting in some of my talking points that I wanted to talk about because it was just, like, drop down, catch a fish, drop. It was, like, Canadian walleye fishing to a T, and obviously, it's not always like that, but it was so fun. Again, grinded it out, got back at, like, 3 a.m. on, I think, Thanksgiving night, and we were running on basically no sleep, so we were trying to get, you know, videos edited, trying to get them posted, trying to get gear situated. And so that was a super fun trip. Incredible place. If you have never been up to Wekusko Falls Lodge, it is a big trip. You know, it's quite a ways up there. But if you're looking for like a big time destination, I mean, I know Taylor, you would say the same thing, but
yeah,
first of all, the Bogdens are like the coolest people ever. And second of all, like it is an amazing location. This like waterfall area just goes corners around the camp. So your cabins are right there here in the water. It is one of the coolest locations I've ever seen. And then you're surrounded by like tons of amazing water for walleye, walleye, pike, trout, anything you want up there, burbot, lake trout, just so many cool things are up there. So yeah, that's a super cool destination. Ironically, where Nick and I met 7 years ago or whatever. So we're kind of a full circle moment for me coming back there now that I'm doing content too. And so, yeah, that was a super fun first trip. But I was so scattered. I was not really prepared for that trip because, like I said, I'm still teaching. So my school days or my days are still teaching. And then, you know, our daughter just turned one. So we have a 1-year-old at home. Life is a little crazy. So we decided to bring the trailer because we wanted to have all our gear that what we could possibly need through the 4-wheeler in that kind of stuff. So I just pretty much had nothing organized, threw it all in and figured like, I'm going to figure it out when I get up there. And yeah, so it was a lot of kind of a scattered mess. Got back home, pretty much was just getting those videos edited. And then I think it was it the next weekend? Yeah. The next weekend after I got back from that, it was the St. Paul Ice Show. And so that was a ton of fun. It's always fun. I just enjoy, you know, just like so many people in the fishing industry are there and just kind of rubbing shoulders with those guys, having conversations with people that, you know, I only get to have a conversation with every so often. People that watch the videos, just so fun interacting with everyone. And so if you've never been to the St. Paul Ice Show, I also just highly recommend. It's just an experience, you know, whether you're finding killer deals, there's usually pretty good deals going on too, but just like being around a bunch of other like fish junkies, like, you know, this is their jam. It's just kind of a cool feeling of like, wow, everybody here is like just as obsessed as I am about this crazy thing we call ice fishing, you know? And I actually left the ice show a little bit early because I needed to get back ASAP on Sunday so I could get a video done. So then I knew there was going to be a small lake that was frozen over that I've only been to one other time. I found it last year, actually. And shallow, freezes early, can have some good walleye action. Can be kind of hit or miss, but have some good walleye action. And got in a super cool, shallow walleye bite, like 5 feet of water. So cool. I don't know if you saw any of that stuff, Taylor, on like the perspective mode. Yeah. So I flipped it into perspective mode and just saw, I don't know how, hundreds of walleyes. And I didn't even know it. I knew because when I got back, there was some on the screen on my live scope unit. There was some on the screen. But when I was out drilling holes, you could see these fish moving around in these giant schools. And I've gotten a lot of really cool live scope footage and like cool eats. Like that might be the coolest live scope footage I have ever gotten. Just in that shallow water. And they were all walleyes. You know, there's always people that come out of the woodworks. Oh, those are perch. Oh, those are this. It's like, okay, we'll go watch the video and see all the walleyes they got. You know, it was a super fun bite, shallow water. Just kind of a sneaky little thing that can be done early in the year like this, especially. And so, yeah, that was the last video I posted. And now just kind of getting my bearings, getting regrouped. We were talking, I was actually just tinkering in the garage a little bit finally tonight, because I am still not like organized for the ice fishing season. I have stuff just scattered everywhere. I've just been piecing things together to get videos done. But yeah, that's kind of the update on my end of where I've been at. That leads us kind of to today. Got some fun stuff in the works. I have so many things that I want to do and so many videos that I want to film, but unfortunately at this stage of my life with, you know, I'm still teaching, doing all these things, I just don't have the capability to do them yet. You know, hopefully in the future, that'll be a lot more time to do that kind of stuff, but just itching. And then we've had 40 below followed by 40 above and 30 mile an hour winds, like finding the right decent, not even the right weather, just decent weather to get out and film. When I do have 1 or 2 days off on a weekend, it's challenging. So yeah, that's kind of been the update for me. It's been a crazy start to the ice season. I feel like it's been just an absolute whirlwind, but trying to capitalize on this early ice time frame because it's so fun. Yeah, that's kind of where I've been at. A lot of stuff going on.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, talking about that recent video, like I'm just like envisioning you, like you almost wouldn't have, you probably didn't even like see that live scope footage till you were editing it.
For sure.
Like, I just almost like want to get like, we all wish that there would have been like a reaction video.
Right.
Like you almost like, it's almost like a thing where like, I don't even know if it's practical or not, but if you're ever like doing something like that, like if you're ever editing a video, like doing like that again, where you've got like all this blind footage, you almost got to set up a camera in your little editing suite, or if you're just sitting at the kitchen table with your laptop, you almost got to set up a GoPro to film you as you're scrubbing through your own footage. Cause I got to imagine your eyes just got big.
Oh yeah, and in the video you could see it a little bit because I like got done drilling, and when I got to my live scope unit, like I could see a big school. But then when you fast forward the footage, you can see it's so much more of like these massive schools of walleye cruising in all different directions. And the crazy thing was, drilling the holes definitely got them moving, but I'm not even gonna say it spooked them because I want to do like an explanation video on this, and I maybe still will.
Yeah.
You can actually see, especially when I zoomed out when I got back, you can actually see exactly where I drilled the holes. And there was one time where you could see a hole drilled, and like right after that, fish just swam like right towards that hole, which is just so crazy if they saw like slush going down or whatever it is. But they weren't spooked by it. It got them moving for sure. But it was kind of a weird thing going on where I'm like, I honestly felt like it almost helped the bite. Because I panned around 90 feet to start, or maybe 80, 75, something like that, in forward mode. And I wasn't seeing much. I saw maybe a few fish hanging around. But when I moved into forward or perspective, it was 45 to 75 is kind of where I varied. And man, when I started drilling, fish just started coming out of the woodworks and just moving everywhere. So it was just, I don't know, it was super cool. Going back and playing through that footage, well, just kind of confirmed, like, man, you just, especially through the ice, you don't know what's going on underneath. You think you know what's going on underneath the ice, and even forward mode in these forward-facing sonar units can do a lot. But man, perspective mode, it's not for every situation for sure. Less than 10 feet of water, especially less than like 6 feet of water, is like the best spot. I was in like five, so it was perfect. But man, you can just see such a wide swath of what's going on. And it can be hard, especially when fish are moving slow, because you get some of these bright returns from weeds, from rocks, from just random things in the water column. And it's really hard until things start moving to really tell what they are. And I'm not going to say I'm dialed on perspective mode. That is the least I use forward a lot, almost 90% of the time. And then I use, down, may I'd say 95% forward, like 4% down mode, and then 1% perspective. So there's a lot of guys that are way more dialed, but being able to see this whole wide swath of what's going on down there, and once these fish start moving, you can really pick out what's going on. And man, that was just a super cool bite, first of all, because around here during the ice fishing season, if you can go catch two, three, four walleyes in an evening session, like that's a pretty good day.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of the beast on these small natural lakes. To go and like not be able, I had to pull my dead stick rod out because, or my tip up finicky fooler out, because I'm like, I can't keep up with this. Like I need to stop, talk about a couple of things. And that rarely happens for me. So just a really kind of special bite, timing worked out. There's a ton of fish. And yeah, so just a, I don't know, that was a super cool thing. Especially that was one of those videos I was super scrambled again. Like I almost didn't go out because I got back. My daughter wasn't feeling great, but I was like, I need to get this video done because I'm not gonna be able to film for the next week. I got out and things lined up, and I was like, oh, that was so special. Like super cool. Just experience that, and to get it did all on footage is makes it even that much better. So yeah, that was a fun bite. Super shallow walleyes, which is, early ice is one of the best times to target walleye shallow. But yeah, it's super fun.
And some of this, this question kind of just a recap of the video. Of course, if anybody wants a more in depth or just the visual, like you just you if you haven't already, I think a lot of people honestly probably have. Like that is like a viral video clip. Your speed ramps of that perspective mode.
Super cool.
Oh gosh, but I mean just golden. But I was just kind of curious of like a little bit of a your thoughts on just how that lake is built. And what it is, about like how it sort of produces a walleye population like that. I mean, I don't want to assume too much, if it's like a fully stocked situation or whatever. But yeah, I agree with you. Just my experience growing up in Minnesota and everything, like, yeah, like it's especially through the ice, a couple of walleyes in one particular outing under any circumstances, like you gotta feel good about that, no matter who you are and almost no matter where you are, just pretty much, especially when you're talking about smaller lakes and in different places. And so yeah, that was like very, very eye-opening. But I was just kind of curious, any offerings on just kind of the how that lake is sort of like structured and built, what the forage is and just what it is in your mind that, just allows for like a population of walleyes to just be like trolling in that environment.
Yeah. And the other cool thing, I don't think I mentioned that, is so I was up at Wacusco, you know, and we're on this incredible walleye bite. And I like wasn't, I was just using, at that time it was the Tungsten Slim Spoon by Northland, because I wanted to get up and down as fast as possible. And like, I didn't use any bait or anything. It was up, down. And I kind of made a joke in that video of like, man, this is just something I can't do back home, you know, like not using bait. And actually in that video, I caught a number of walleyes without using any bait, just literally just a spoon. I was using the thumper spoon then, because we were shallow water, but it was just kind of one of those funny things of like, I just got done talking how I can't do this back home. Now I'm back home and I'm doing it again. So just kind of a special bite there. But you know, I'll be 100% honest. This is a lake that I had just fished for the first time last year. And so I don't have like a super in-depth answer to everything that's going on. I could have speculations, but I don't have an answer to everything that's going on. But one of my favorite things about this early ice time of year is, you know, North Dakota is especially known for this. There's some of these like small, tiny lakes that don't get fish in the summer because there's like, you can't get a boat on them, or you have to hike into them, or, you know, limited access. You guys have all those sloughs over there, which are super cool, that are loaded with like perch and walleyes and stuff. And it's kind of one of those situations, this small, shallow lake. I'm not sure if it's like a rearing pond. I'm not sure what exactly the situation is of, or if, you know, a private individual stocks it, or the DNR just keeps it stocked, or whatever the situation is. But there's a lot of fish in there. I found a few of these that are like small, shallow. I think this one is for sure less than 10 feet. I don't think I found anywhere deeper than like 8 even, but you know, then that's another foot or so with the live scope pole. So, you know, 8 to 10 feet, that is the deepest. And then, you know, there's almost like a little bit of a bay that's barren of weeds, which is kind of interesting, because a lot of these shallow stuff I find in weeds, but, and they just roam up there. And so I still haven't pieced together the full, you know, that's one of the things that I love to do, is like piece together like why behind some of this. And this is one that I'm still a little bit stumped on. I did see some bait pods cruising there. So I imagine there's some sort of bait. Obviously, if there's walleyes in there, there's got to be bait cruising in there. But I still don't have an amazing answer of like, oh, there's these weeds there, there's that. It's this kind of shallower bay, even shallower in like the main part of the lake. And man, those fish just go up there and they're just roaming these big groups. And I would say more so than anything is just go explore some of these small little, even if like you hear a rumbling of like, ooh, there's maybe some walleyes in this lake. I don't know how many of those lakes I've gone and tried and struck out on, or like I've seen stuff on Onyx Fish, or, you know, finding some of these little backcountry lakes, or seeing, I talked about it in my video. I found a couple lakes where I've been driving to a different lake and I've seen some tracks going back to a lake. And I'm like, what's back there? So I pull it up on whatever electronic, you know, Google Maps or Onyx or whatever. And I was like, oh, there is a lake back there. And it's like, then I save it in my phone of like, try this lake, you know, and then I'll go back there and I'll just explore. I don't get to do that nearly as much as I used to, just because of time's sake. But man, being able to just like see some of these things, winter, especially early, it's just a different for me. I'm so dialed in on these bigger lakes. I want to get my boat and explore big water, or winter early ice, especially when nothing else is frozen. I just love to explore these smaller backcountry lakes. You know, obviously North Dakota has a bunch of those like sloughy type lakes. And so that's really kind of the setup of that one smaller lake that just doesn't get very deep. So it gets ice early and you can fish it early. And yeah, there were some aggressive walleyes and there was a ton of fun.
You know, so often it's like, even on the best walleye fisheries, like if you just consider all the other biomass of fish, it's, you know, there's the rough fish, and then the pan fish, you know, are typically like thriving in those lakes if it's, you know, oxygenated and good, and maybe there's an inlet, an outlet, maybe some moving water, whatever, like with that shallow stuff, so you don't have freeze outs. You know, it's usually like the pan fish that you know, ultimately rule the roost, but you can, so you kind of have to kind of nuance, you know, to kind of sort through if you were totally targeting walleyes. But it almost seemed like what you were doing, it was like, you know, maybe you can just kind of expand on it, or maybe some things that we didn't see or whatever, but it's like, it was almost like walleyes are like number one on that body of water. And so I'm just like, my gears are turning of like, how many bodies of water do I got to start looking for some of this stuff? Because there's got to be more of it. You know, you already made mention that, you know, you're aware of a few of them.
It's like, yeah, like I said, I wish I could like give you a super detailed answer, but I wish I had. It reminds me just, you know, setup of this lake. It kind of reminds me of a mini Red Lake, or even like Lake Winnipeg for that matter, where it's like these just big basin and these fish just roam. And you just have to drill, drill, drill until you start seeing enough fish where you feel like it's fishable. And obviously this is now in a much smaller, you know, say on Lake Winnipeg, you're driving, you know, you might drive, drill a hole, drive half a mile, drill a hole, drive half. And that's how you're finding them. We're like, you know, this might be okay. I'm going to drill a hole and drive 100 feet or yeah, walk for the most part. Cause a lot of these you can't drive on, but just until they're until you can find the enough fish where you feel like it's good enough to fish. And I, like, when I saw those first, I was like, I wasn't 100% certain they were walleyes until I started catching a bunch more. Like, I had caught walleyes there last year, the first time I went. But yeah, being able to catch a bunch of walleyes on there. And, you know, there's always people in the comment section when I posted something on social media, like, looking at all these fish on perspective mode. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, those are perch. Oh, those are whatever. Because it's like, well, all right. Like, what do you want? Like, I got a video of catching a bunch of them. So it is what it is. But yeah, it was pretty special, something that I'm not taking for granted. And still, like, I never want to give a definitive answer unless I'm like dialed on it, you know, like I want to. And so I don't feel like I'm dialed on this one. Like, I'm still learning. And yeah, it's just kind of cool. So I'm enjoying that. But if there's anything to learn from any of that, is like, go explore some of these lakes, whether you have something you have an inkling about that you've seen on, like, I do spend so much time, you know, scouting on like Onyx Fish or like the DNR Lake Finder, or talking to people, and they say, oh, well, this lake has walleyes or this lake has walleyes. Like, I never would have thought that, you know. And but keep in mind, you have to be patient with that. Last year when I did this, last year when I found this lake, I had spent 3 days, maybe four, prior to that, checking out a number of different lakes, and I struck out 3 or 4 days in a row on like lakes that I wanted to try, and I was like so done with it. I went to this lake and I was like, well, here we go again. And luckily stumbled onto a handful of walleyes, and I was like, okay, there's fish in here. And now this year I was kind of able to expand on that and learn a little bit more. And yeah, I'm looking forward to just kind of trying out more of these lakes. I have a list of them in my phone of like, whether it's for big fish or for numbers. A lot of this stuff is, like I said, I found an Onyx that I'm like seeing, oh, this data looks pretty good. And I wish I had more time just to explore some of these.
TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. Head to their website, tkicnc.com, to find a full listing of their offerings. There you're going to find, for this ice season, the deluxe TKI sonar shuttle or the collapsible carbon fiber pole mounting kit. For top-of-the-line, American-made fishing equipment, head to tkicnc.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Yeah, yeah. And it looks like one of those adventures, too. It's probably worth saying. It's like, it doesn't even have to be walleyes. Mm-hmm. But like to go on a small lake where it's like walk-in access only, you know, or just limited access to where you're just, you know, to find these places that ultimately it just translates to like low pressure. Like low, yeah. To fish low pressure fish and be on a body of water that's like the size that you can kind of attack even if you're by yourself. And then it's just like you wouldn't have to twist my arm to do a deal like that. And then where we're just going to go in there and without any fisheries data, and we're just going to go find like what we can catch. It might be a bluegill deal. It might be a perch deal. It might be a crappie deal. We're talking is kind of a spectacular walleye moment for you, but it's like, you know, sometimes you just want to go in there and have those types of experiences because it's so cool to just, you know, hike down a long, narrow snowmobile path or whatever and come out on a beaver pond, you know, and whether you're by yourself or with one other person and just like feel like you're breaking it down. But when you're marking fish and you're getting on them, you're just so that much more confident that they're unpressured. And usually that means they're bitey or at least biteier. And it's like, yeah, just like the whole element of like finding your own fish. But yeah, dude, I think that was, I'm so pumped that you had that experience and that you caught that stuff on film. I was super happy for you just in that element, but also too, just to like showcase and celebrate finding small water, early ice, wherever you're at and being able to fish shallow. And it's like, yeah, dude, it could have been a bunch of eater bluegills. I still feel like those are just super, super cool things to do, like no matter what it is. But that's a little bit of a segue. One of my notes here, we're going to kind of jump ahead to it. I want to talk a little bit about like you fish solo a lot, like looking back at your content, like so much of what you do, you know, just almost like, almost all of it outside of that Wacusco trip and you know, the Walleye Cup stuff. You've definitely done a lot of stuff by yourself, and I respect that a ton, but I'm kind of curious, talking about early ice locations, the type of spots that you're looking for, but I kind of want to, you know, if there's anything, if at all, if it's something that, you know, a thought process that you've had, it's like some of the things that you do because you are by yourself that you feel like make you a little bit more efficient. To help you capitalize where you don't have like that network sort of present.
For sure. Yeah, no, there are definitely, you know, having a network like that is this time and place, and it's super cool, a ton of fun. Obviously, when you're going out and you're just like doing it on your own, it's just that much more rewarding, you know, like just going exploring things. Also, is it super frustrating? Like last year when I went out and I tried 4 lakes in a row, 4 days in a row, and I struck out all 4 days, that's just super frustrating, you know? But you kind of got to get your lumps to be able to find some of those cool bites too. But when I'm fishing solo, whether it's a small body of water or it's a big body of water, there are definitely like certain things that I focus on to help, you know, be a little more efficient and maximize my time. And, you know, one of the first things that I do, well, even if it's a lake I've fished before, is I know that I need to get out there if I can, like midday, just for the sole reason is to do some scouting. And when I'm out there scouting, I'm not looking for fish. That's going to sound really weird to a lot of people. Like, you're not looking for fish. It's like, no, what I found in the winter, especially when I'm talking walleyes, you know, during the daytime, you like for crappies, say, you can find basin crappies cruising during the day and they kind of disperse over the night. You know, when some of those bugs start coming up and, you know, I'm not going to go super in depth into that. That's a bite that you can find. But what I found for walleyes, unless you're on like a red lake or a lake of the woods or some of those lakes, there are certain areas that the walleyes are when they are feeding. And I don't know if they're just belly to the bottom, if they're all in deep water. You know, every lake fish is a little different. They could be doing a variety of those things. But during the daytime, super hard on a lot of our kind of stock, natural, clear bodies of water, super hard to get walleyes to bite during the day. And so when I'm out there during the day, I go there early specifically to look for structure, look for, depending on if I'm fishing mid-lake structure, looking for a little spot on the spot. I don't get as worried about that nowadays in the open water, but winter, it is so crucial to be on that spot on the spot. You know, this is going back to a little bit of a network thing, but when me, Nick, and Brett went to Devils, what was it, 2 years ago now, I think, we were cruising around. I was like just running around mad, drilling holes everywhere. And we were catching a couple fish. Nick was camped out on a spot catching some fish. But I just felt like there was something left. And I kept drilling. This was during the daytime, not prime time necessarily. And I finally found this like very good transition from sand to rock. And then I was able to put that work early. So then by prime time, I was set up. I was dialed. I was ready to go. And those fish were cruising that sand to rock transition, and it was awesome. And so being able to go out there early, you know, when you have a network, you can kind of all pick, say you're out for four or five people, you're all on different spots trying different things. And then if someone starts getting onto something, you can all try that same type of thing. When you're by yourself, you can't do that. So I do as much homework as I can beforehand, drilling holes, using my underwater camera. So, you know, I have a AquaView 822 that I can just go quick, bounce around to holes. It's not a big bulky camera. I just do that a ton to do some scouting. Okay, where's this transition at? And what kind of weeds am I finding? What am I finding for structure here? Is it rocks? Is it just rubble? Is it big rocks? And I just learn as much as I possibly can. And I don't necessarily even always pick a spot right then, but I just remember, okay, big rocks right here, smaller rubble right here, weeds over here, sand right here. And just like putting this mental picture together in my mind. If you've watched any of my videos, you know, I'm a very visual person. I put a ton of visuals in my videos so that way you guys can see and like kind of exactly what's going on that body of water and what kind of what's going on in my brain. And trust me, it's kind of a scary place sometimes figuring out what's going on in this brain of mine. But I was like, the gears are just constantly turning of like, okay, what's setting up? What's going on? And I was storing all that information of like, where is everything? Then once I get that information, now I kind of make it calculated, like what is going to be my highest percentage area? In the wintertime, I'm all about high percentage areas. There might be spots that look cool, that like, ooh, that would be fun to try. But that's like, if I have a couple buddies and I want them to go try something new. But there's certain areas, whether it's like a saddle or whether it's a specific transition from rock to sand or whether it's a big boulder, whether it's an opening in the weeds, all these different things. I try to find that kind of sweet spot, that high percentage area where these fish are going to be traveling because it's usually a pretty small bite window. You know, in the wintertime around here on your typical walleye lake, or even, you know, any type of lake, really, there's these bite windows, especially in the evenings. And I want to be able to know what I'm doing so I can adjust if I need, but that way I can set my stuff up in prime location. So that's a huge thing for me is getting out, even when the bite's not happy. You know, a lot of guys are like, oh, I'm not going to go right now because they're not going to bite until that last hour or until that last half hour. It's like, okay, that's all well and good if you just have a spot that you can just run to, you know, there's fish biting, whatever, you'll go catch your one or two and you'll go home and you can do that whenever you want. But for me, I'm always exploring new things. And so being able to get out there early and really get a lay of the land. So I know when it gets to be that prime time, I know where everything is. And the other thing is I have my holes drilled, you know, I have my holes drilled beforehand. So I don't have to drill during the prime time because one, that takes up time, but two, it can spook fish. And so being able to know where things are at. I know I kind of in my mind mark holes of like, okay, that's the top of the hump. This is the side of it. There's a big boulder over by this one. There's some weeds over by this one. And again, that's all laid out in my head, being able to figure out where all that is. Then I pick my high percentage area, like what looks like the best spot where walleyes are going to be moving. And then I will set up there. And I almost always, very often I use a set line, like a, you know, finicky fool or some sort of tip up just to try something different. If I'm super confident in my spot and I know there's gonna be a lot of fish moving in there, I will use two rods very close together and have a dead stick and a jigging rod, which can be a deadly combo. But otherwise I'm using a setup or a set line on something different than what I'm fishing. I might be fishing off the deeper edge of that break and I have one right up next to the weeds. I might be fishing, okay, I'm in an opening in the weeds. Now I'm going to put this one, my set line, a little more in the weeds or, you know, whatever that is, I utilize my set line to kind of explore a little bit. Also, if I'm on a break line, you know, a lot of times, or more so probably mid-lake structure, not necessarily a break line, But on mid-lake structure, those walleyes will tend to go from deeper to shallower. So I'll set up deeper because that's where those fish are going to start out. And then I'll set my set line up a little shallower and I'll have holes drilled up all the way up there. And so a lot of times you'll see like some of those perch or bait fish moving in. And then when those start clearing out, the walleyes are coming in. You catch a walleye or two and then they kind of disperse. Once your set line starts going off, okay, now they're moving up there. So I'll even like leapfrog it at times. And so depending on how your structure sets up, that's another way is to kind of be efficient where you're not having a big team of guys to be able to, oh, they're in 12 feet of water now. You're out in 20, move shallower. Utilize those set lines to kind of get away from what you're doing, like your number one spot, so you can learn a little bit more. Maybe they're off on this point versus on the break line, vice versa. So being able to get out there early so I can know exactly what's going on and have my holes drilled so I don't have to spook fish and just be as efficient as possible in these small bite windows. And then utilizing your set line so you can try multiple things. But the other thing I will say is just having your gear as dialed as possible. Before night before, I'll sometimes stay up way too late because I want to make sure I'm not doing anything else during that prime white window. If you have to tie on one more hook, if you have to, whatever it might be to get your gear situated. That's just another thing you can do instead of borrowing a rod from a buddy or say, hey, come fish this hole or whatever. Having extra of everything so you can just go and do it. So fishing solo, there's just all those little things that you need to explore as far as like gear and to make yourself a little more efficient. And once it gets to be kind of like now where you can start using machines, it's a lot easier for me because I have my snowmobile. I can have everything. I have my monster box on the back of it. I have rod holders. I have everything just dialed. So I just know where everything is. And I can just get it because, if you spend 5 minutes fumbling around with something or looking for something, that's 5 minutes where you could have caught maybe your only two walleyes in the night. And that maybe seems a little bit dramatic, but I've seen it happen so often where I see super short bite windows. And so being able to have your gear dialed on top of that and making sure everything's set before you even go out on the ice, those are probably the, I don't know, two or three main things is getting out there early so you can explore. And then, once you're set up, utilizing your set line to check different stuff. And then ultimately just having your gear dialed so you don't have to, mess around with anything once you finally get in those bite windows. And, I talk a lot of walleyes because that's primarily what I do. I also do a lot of crappie fishing. And, honestly, I do a lot of the same things. However, I just adapt it to whatever the bite is. Obviously crappies you can't catch during the day, cruising the basin, those types of things as well. But a lot of those same rules still apply.
Talk about kind of glide a little bit into gear because I do want to hit you with some gear questions. But just your hard preferences, if you have any, with your setups, or even just any lure mods or anything like that. But as far as your line selection, your rod selection, I'm just sort of curious where you've gotten to this point, in your fishing career with just some of your gear preferences. When you're fishing some of these conditions and, just, the whole thing, the rod reel. I mean, I know you do display this stuff a lot in your videos. But, just kind of like your explanation and almost like, what you've gone through to get to this point, for anything that you do have big preferences on.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Ice fishermen, we're so weird because half of our joy is like catching fish in the ice. The other half of our joy with ice fishing is just like tinkering with gear and
Oh,
like
yes,
modding
dude.
stuff up.
Thank
And
you for
like,
saying that.
it's just like me and Nick talk about that all the time. We're like, honestly, one of my favorite things about ice fishing is just like monkeying around with gear and buying little things that, like that you can, whatever. It's just one of those things. And so on the gear side of things, I would say, I have like my early ice setup and I have my kind of rest of the year setup. Early ice as I'm not even necessarily talking rod and reel yet. I'm just talking about like being able what you're using to get your gear out there. For the longest time, I would even like pull my fish house out, my flip over, is like a two-man flip over. And I would pull that out and I was just dogging it. And it was not fun. So then I got like a just a medium sled to pull out. And that worked out good too, but still just not super dialed. Got a sonar sled this year. And I that thing is so nice. Be able to have everything right there. I have not got to mod mine out. If you've seen any of Nick's videos of his sonar sled dialed, it is so awesome. And I like by the time that season of like being able to walk your stuff out is done, I'm not even gonna get a chance to touch mine. So mine is gonna have to be a project for next year to mod mine out. But as far as gear stuff goes, early season, I love to have some sort of dialed like pullout sled where you have your forward facing sonar, whatever splasher, your rod holders, your everything is just right there, you know, so you don't have to fumble through a bag or fumble through a bucket full of stuff. Being able to have that and is one type of like gear thing that I love. Again, I wish I could say more of how I had it dialed in. But unfortunately mine's just straight out of the box, I guess you could say. And it's worked very well. But even I had like this old jet sled that I put rod holders and just like little things like that to get it dialed in, is one gear thing. Now that is getting to be like more machine season, I love having my snowmobile set up how it is. I have an Otter Monster box on the back and I have rod holders and I have a spot for my live scope. Arc Lab has these really cool, for their shuttle, they have like these plates with the link system from Skidoo that you can, they're called quick dock plates, and you can put it. So I have one I can put inside it and I can put it on the outside. And there's just all these really awesome mods that you can do to get some of that stuff dialed in, because I am all about efficiency. When I'm using my snowmobile, it's one of my favorite things because I can have everything right there, drive to a new spot, drill my hole quick. I'm fishing in 2 seconds. I know where everything is. My live scope's already sitting right there. I'm not having to take an extra 5-10 minutes just getting some stuff set up. So for some of that gear stuff, and I have actually a rundown of my snowmobile and my setup on my channel too, if anybody is interested. Because if you're a gear junkie like me, I've watched probably 100 of those snowmobile setup videos because I just like love finding the next little thing or what's one thing I can steal from this video. So as far as that kind of gear stuff goes, being able to have your setup, you know, a lot of guys mod out four wheelers and they're super cool. There's different things that you can do with four wheelers that you can't do with snowmobiles, or, you know, some of those types of things. And so that is a little bit of the gear that I like, is just some of those more so transportation type gear, like the sonar sled and the snowmobile and some of those. Now when we're talking like rod reel setup, that's one of my favorite things about the ice season, is, you know, in the open water, there's like so many things, which makes it fun too, in some respects, of like, you get to explore with a lot of different presentations. But in the winter, I can probably count on one hand, I could get through an ice season with a handful of things, you know. And number one and number two, I'm going to have a jigging rod and a dead stick rod. And my jigging rod, depending on what I'm doing. So when I was up to Wekusko specifically, you know, we were fishing 15, 16 feet of water, and we were kind of originally going to be hole hopping, but also the fishing was really good. So I just wanted to get up and down very quickly. And so what I was running there for either my hole hopping rod is it's a tungsten slim spoon. You'll use some sort of like tungsten heavier. I'm not as worried about the action on it. I'm just worried about like, okay, I drill a hole, I got a bunch of slush sitting in it. I don't want a light little spoon that's going to get caught up in there and I have to try to get it down. I don't want to take time to, you know, move slush. I want to be as efficient as possible. So I'm using, in that video, I use a tungsten slim spoon. I started using those a little bit last year. I actually really like those things. They get up and down really quick. They have a cool shape, just a nice design on it, and even a little bit of movement on there. And so that will be like my hole hopping setup. I will run that on usually a little longer rod. You know, I started going towards some of those longer, you know, 40, 42 inch rods even. And that was a lot of fun. It's just nice to be able to set the hook and you feel like you have a little more play. You know, growing up, I was using all these super short rods, and I know the longer rods are becoming more popular. And so I do like those longer ones like that. However, I will say there are times where I feel like it gets in my way a little bit. You know, if I'm needing to be, say if I only drill one hole because I'm hole hopping, I have my live scope in that hole. Now I need to go down and move my pole, or say you're using a flash, you have to go down and pick up that flasher, or you put it in there. And now that rod is so long, it gets a little goofy doing some of that. If you're like going down to catch or to get a fish out of the hole, that long rod can make it a little bit challenging at times. Honestly, biting the fish on them, awesome. So I've kind of settled into like my favorite, I would say like hole hopping rod with those little bit heavier baits like that, whether it's a buckshot spoon or a tungsten buckshot spoon, more of a lead, just get up and down quick, is 36 inch to 40 inch. And depending on the body of water, I'm probably using a lot of medium light for my stuff. If I'm, you know, using even up to like a, you know, a little bit beefier or a little heavier tungsten spoon. I will sometimes go to like a medium, or if I'm up on, like Lake Winnipeg or some of those, I will obviously beef up a little bit too. But 36 to 40 inch medium light on the little longer side for hole hopping. Then once I find an area where I'm pretty confident there's fish here, I have time to like clear out my hole of slush. I'm not worried about getting up and down ASAP. Or if I'm dealing with like maybe a little more finicky fish, that's when I'll go to more of like a fluttery type spoon. The one that I used in the video where I was fishing shallow. I was able to use that spoon there because I wasn't as worried about getting up and down very quickly. That was the Northland Thumper spoon. Super cool action when it's falling. It just kind of flutters down. It's got an extra little blade on it. So that's a really one that I use when I know I'm gonna be sitting stationary. I'm not as worried about getting up and down quickly, or if I'm in shallow water, and I can use that as like a lift up and then let it flutter down if I need to, or sometimes even bouncing it. That's kind of a cool action side to side. And that one again, I tend to lean more towards that 36 inch. Sometimes when I'm in the house, or if I'm in like a tight house, I will go down to like a 32 inch medium light. But for the most part, I'm using 36 inch medium. Again, if I'm upsizing that weight of my spoon, or even using more tungsten type stuff, I will move to a medium as well at times, but usually a medium light. Both of those rods, I will use like an 8 or 10 pound braid. I'm a big braid guy. I know a lot of guys still use mono or fluoro for ice fishing, just to have that extra stretch. But I want to be able to feel that bite. I want all the sensitivity. And I trust the rest of my gear to kind of help with some of that stretch that the mono can bring. So I'll use 8 to 10 pound braid. I use an FG knot to six, even down to 6 to 10 pound fluorocarbon leader. If I'm on a much more finicky bite, I'll go down to that 6 pound, little more, whatever I can get away with 10 pound. I've gone up to like 12 or even 14, 20 pound. If I know, say I'm on Lake of the Woods, and I know I'm like a chance of catching some big pike, I'll go up to that. Or if that's stained water, they don't really care. Like then I just don't want to break off, So I'll go upsize my fluorocarbon leader. But like I said, I'll do that with an FG knot. That's been my favorite knot as of late. We'll still use a uni knot or uni knot as well. But the FG knot has been kind of the go-to for me. And then all of my rods, I have like a PC Fun Carbon X2. I'll use like a 1000 size reel. That Carbon X2 is just such a nice reel. Your bang for your buck on that thing is so awesome. And 1000 size is typically my preferred method. Sometimes, if I have a little beefier setup, I will move up to a 2000. But with these smaller rods, for me, what it tends to be is more balance and feel than anything. With these smaller rods, the 1000 size and a lot of these reels do feel a little more balanced, just feel a little bit better. I feel like even just it's a minor thing, but just work my baits a little better and more efficiently. If I'm up ripping big rattle baits on Lake Winnipeg, or if I'm fishing, say lake trout, things like that, that's when I'll move up to like that 2000 size reel. But honestly, for the vast majority, I'm using that 1000 size reel. And so that's kind of my go-to for my two jigging rods. Now, when I go to say like a dead stick rod or my set line rod, that's where I will go to probably like a 32 to 36 inch, again, similar lengths for those. And I love those noodle tips. I've used 2B has a dead stick rod. I've used the JT walleye snare. A lot of those that have just that noodle tip. It's such a cool, I don't know, it's just fun to be able to sit in that house. And if it's sitting right next to you, or you're like watching it and you just see that tip pop for that first little bite, and then you see it kind of slowly go. It's just one of those things that just gets the juices flowing. It's like using a slip bobber or using a bobber like I used forever growing up on Lake of the Woods. And so 32 to 36 inch on that noodle rod. And then a lot of guys use the bait for feeder reels for those. Whether it's with a finicky fooler or some sort of tip up, iFish Pro, whatever it is, or if it's even sitting next to them. So that way, they set it up super light so it can still pull line, but there's a little bit of tension. A lot of guys use those and have had a lot of success. I have not. I have found that even on the lightest setting, and maybe I had a bad reel or two, but on some of those bait feeders, I have had the experience where I have seen multiple fish drop them, even on the lightest setting, where they drop them when they start to have to pull that just that little bit more. And so again, there's enough anglers that are way better anglers than I am, that use them and stand by them, those bait feeder reels. I tried it for a while and I was sold on it. And then I just had enough experience where I had fish drop. And it might not have even been for that. It might've been for other reasons. But for example, like on finicky foolers, I'd have them pick it up, flag would go up, they'd be on it for a bit. And then I could see them like spit it. And so I've been a little bit leery. I've just been to free spooling, but again, free spooling, that's going to have its own issues too. If it's windy and it's get caught on stuff. So you kind of take a, it's a horse apiece as far as that goes. But for my dead stick rod, if it's next to me, I will have the dead stick with a 1,000 size reel again. And when it's next to me, one of my favorite things to do is a small tungsten jig. Honestly, I use a lot of like oversized panfish jigs essentially, and just hook a, you know, a fat head right through the mouth, out the head, and just let that thing swim around down there. That's one of my favorites because I can get up and down quickly still. And I've just had a lot of success on that. You know, I will also use, I've used things like a forage minnow. Those have been successful for me as well. I will often use a split shot and like a number four Gamakatsu octopus hook, and I'll just hook a minnow right through the back and just kind of let it swim around down there. Actually, that's what I was doing in my last video. Is I just had a plain hook and I didn't even put a weight on it then. It was so shallow that I'm like, I can just let this thing swim around down there and these fish are going to come around. And so that's another thing I'll do for my dead stick setup. The other one I'm intrigued about, I can't say like this is the deal or not. Northland came out these new bobber jigs. I think they were originally meant for like open water under a slip bobber, but I could see a lot of application. I think they're even, you know, they've done some product development with that of like setting it on a set line of like a finicky fooler iFish Pro, or even sitting right next to you as like a dead stick rod. It's got that more flat edges, so it's supposed to be, you know, help with the sonar being able to recognize that. Some of those things got a nice strong hook on it. So I have not used it yet. I just picked some up, looking forward to trying those out, but I'm always looking at getting some of those different dead stick approaches as well. So those small tungsten jig, plain hook, or potentially this new one as well is another one that I'm going to use for my dead stick rod. And again, I will go sometimes on my dead stick, I'll go a little bit lighter stuff just because that's like, I want to be a little more finicky, a little more like, or on some of these finicky fish. So I'll use like 6 pound braid even and 6 pound fluoro and just go as, you know, light as possible, because 6 pound braid, you know, obviously the braid isn't going to matter as much, but I feel like when I have it on a set line, it free spools a little easier. So that's why I'll sometimes downsize on that as well versus some of that thicker stuff, even 8 to 10 doesn't make a huge difference, but just enough where sometimes I can get caught up where that lighter stuff is just a little more free spooling. And then if I'm using like a noodle rod like that, it has a little more give on that too. So those are probably the three main ones that I will go through that I could fish probably, you know, if I'm fishing walleyes around here, those will be what I'll use all the time. You know, if we're talking Lake Winnipeg, we just went up there. I was getting a little more dialed on that. That was my first time. Honestly, my favorite rod that I used up there, it was a 40 inch. I think it was a Black Rain by JT. That thing was awesome for those greenback walleyes. Using that for my rattle bait rod, that was super cool. I went up to like 10 pound braid, and I think I had like a 12 pound fluoro leader on there because I was like, these things are beefy, like they're looking for aggressive baits. And so that was a ton of fun doing that. But those are the three as far as around home for my jigging rods, dead sticks, and some of those that I use primarily as far as like gear talk goes, at least.
You know, I like hearing that you're just as experimental or open-minded, you know, with your set line. Or you definitely have a lot of different thought processes, you know, whether it's situationally or you're just willing to kind of, you know, dial that in too, because gosh, there's just so many days where sometimes the set line is the whole thing. I would definitely trade a handful of fish on a set line for each one that I do catch on a jig rod, you know, because it's fun to catch them on a jig rod and feel the bite or see the bite or whatever that is. Like, you know, we don't even have to speak on that. I think everybody's probably, you know, understands that. But there's definitely, you can definitely get lazy with the set lines, and we're all guilty of it. But I really just want to kind of emphasize that I appreciate what you said about the set lines and just kind of the experimentation and things that you go in on that, because I mean, I can, Yeah, I can definitely see it's almost like industry wide too. This is something we've been talking about for the last couple of years, but you know, with the better understanding of just how spooky fish can be, you know, this the remote lines, just because it's a quiet hole and nobody's walking around it, you know, like the remote lines that are away from you, just how productive, you know, or just how better understanding that we have of that, and just giving it the appreciation. You see, like the rule changes in Minnesota with like automatic hook setting devices.
Yeah,
and just
that's
how,
what I was gonna bring up. Yeah, no, I was just saying, and that's another nuance to this whole thing is like, now in Minnesota we can use some of those automatic hook setters. So now it was really actually kind of a convenient timing. So when we went up to Wekusko and we were targeting those big rainbows, you know, all of our biggest bite came on jaw jackers. And actually I had one I almost lost a rod on, but I was luckily able to save it. But all of our biggest bites came on automatic hook setting devices. And it sounded like that was pretty consistent, you know, talking to Clayton, talking to some of those other guys. And so that is one thing that I'm honestly really curious. That is something I haven't used hardly at all. That was my first time using them, was up there. And I know a lot of the guys that fish like some of the harbors or fish, you know, trout especially, they do it. But I think there are some, you know, for panfish, for perch, or like for crappies, for perch, for some of those things. And even I almost set one out when I was out the other day for fishing those walleyes, because I just more so want to experiment and see like, okay, what is going to be more efficient? What's a better strategy? And even like we're talking about with like gear and setups, I'm not a guy that's so set on one thing that I'm never willing to change. You know, we'll have the same conversation next year, and I would have probably some different answers on a couple of these things, because I experimented with something different and I like something different. And, you know, I want to be a guy that's always learning, and I always want to try to find something that's more efficient or going to help me land more fish or whatever. So I'm definitely curious about these automatic hook setting devices and some of the applications that they could have, because I think they could play, obviously, for walleyes, depending on the size of the minnow that you're using, those, you know, whether it's an iFish Pro or a Finicky Fool or whatever you end up using for a set line that can just free spool, those work, because sometimes with those bigger minnows, especially walleyes, just need a little bit extra time to eat. But I do think there's a number of species, a number of situations where that automatic hook setting device can be a thing for sure. And I don't know how much experience you've had, but it does seem like, you know, having a decent length to a rod and having a relatively moderate action, or even a fiberglass rod, you know, especially when you're targeting some of those bigger fish, just something that's going to have more of that, you know, bend to it instead of that super fast action right at the tip, just because sometimes you got to run over there. And I don't know about you, but my 40 time isn't as fast as it used to be. So being able to, especially when you're in ice fishing bibs and trudging through snow. So wanting to just keep that thing pinned and not let it, you know, straighten that rod out like a cue ball, can be a piece too. So if you are, if you're in Minnesota and you're like me, I'm like, ooh, I kind of want to try this thing out. That is one of the things that I've experienced. One of the things that I've heard is getting a decent length, but also something that has a good either moderate action or, you know, some of those fiberglass rods that have that good play to them for keeping those fish pinned after it kind of sets the hook on them.
Yeah. Eric Hadia, he's like my go-to source of information. I mean, he even, you know, developed those hot rods, you know, doing the trout deal.
Yeah.
Like the big browns and rainbows, like over in the harbors, right? Milwaukee Harbor.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Like he's like automatic hook setting, you know, aficionado, and
for
he
sure.
Travels, he takes that places, man. It's seen him on like Devil's Lake and whatnot. It's like, dude, he'll do that on perch. He'll do that on a perch bite. No doubt about it. TJ, man, once again, always a pleasure. You definitely, so much juice, man. It gets me just fired up early on in the season, and, just talking about everything that you got going on, and the updates are just such a pleasure. And, so yeah, man, we can definitely close this out. If there's anything, you know, that you want to reiterate or anything that you want to promote, you're not guiding anymore, so we can't promote your guide service.
Right.
Have the calls slowed down?
A little bit. I've been working on getting rid of my, like, this is the weirdest thing to say. I've been working on getting rid of my presence out there as far as like my website and some of those types of things to try to slow down some of like the calls and those kinds of things. So that has been starting to work, which is so weird because I spent so much energy and time building that up. And it's just kind of weird reverting back to that. So yeah, no, things have been slowing down on that. No, but first and foremost, I just want to say appreciate you having me on again. I always get excited when I get a text from you saying, "Hey, you want to do a podcast?" It's just like, catching up with a buddy, talking fishing, and I just can never have enough of those conversations. So hopefully, one or two people enjoy us blabbering on about fishing too, because I sure enjoy it. So thanks for having me on. And for anybody that's interested, like I said, the number one spot to like go check out some of the visuals and some of the content side of things. It's all under TJ Erickson, Facebook, Instagram. Share little tidbits on that stuff as well. All that is just under TJ Erickson now. I finally made the switch over from TJ's guide service. So that's where you can find me. So yeah, no. Otherwise, I really appreciate you having me on, Taylor. It's always fun talking. I enjoy our conversations before and during the calls. So it's always fun.
Yeah, dude. One place that it's never going to change is in my phone. You're always going to be under TJ's guide service in my phone. I just made that declaration to myself. It's like, I'm just, we can never let some of these things die. And
That's right.
I knew TJ Erickson back when he was just a guide.
I love it.